Welcome. I'm Sunni Khalid, and this is Your Call. On November 4th, California voters will head to the polls to decide the fate of Prop 50, a highly contested ballot measure that could reshape the state's congressional map and potentially flip the House in a special election. Spearheaded by Governor Gavin Newsom as response to the redistricting fight Trump started earlier this year when he called upon Texas lawmakers to redraw their maps to benefit the GOP, Prop 50 would temporarily suspend the state's independent redistricting commission's maps in favor of using gerrymandered maps drawn to favor Democrats. These new maps are expected to flip five seats currently held by Republicans in the state, counteracting the Republican gains made in Texas and jeopardizing Republican control of the House ahead of the 2026 midterms. If the GOP loses the House in 2026, Trump will face major challenges to the implementation of his policy agenda, as well as increased Democratic scrutiny, including the possibility of impeachment. With 51% of Californians currently planning to vote in favor of Prop 50 and approximately $140 million already pouring into campaigns on both sides, the stakes couldn't be higher. Today, we'll speak with journalists who have been covering this issue about the measure that has ignited one of the most expensive and consequential political battles in California's history. But what does Prop 50 mean for California? What districts and seats will be impacted? And how will the results of this special election play into the national battle over gerrymandering? Maya C. Miller covers politics and government accountability for Cal Matters. She came to Cal Matters in June 2025 by way of the New York Times, where she covered Congress as the David E. Rosenbaum Fellow in Washington, D.C. Prior to the New York Times, Maya Miller reported for the Sacramento Bee, the Seattle Times, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and the Des Moines Register. Maya, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right. And then we have Leah Russell. She covers Governor Newsom for the Sacramento Bee's Capital Bureau. She's originally from San Francisco, but Leah previously worked, so we're alumni, of the Baltimore Sun in Maryland and the Bangor Daily News in Maine. Leah, from one Sun escapee to another, thanks for being here. We're glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
All right. Maya, first question is for you. The Prop 50 fight has been incredibly contentious, both at the state and national level. How does this ballot measure promise to reshape California politics, whether it's approved or denied by voters next month?
Well, that's a great question. I think that for sure, if the voters of California approve this proposition in just under, I think it's just under 3 weeks is Election Day. Mm-hmm. Ballots are already out now and people are already sending them back in. Definitely if this proposition passes next month, you know, we will see a reduction in the Republican vote coming out of California. You know, the power that Republican voters in California have will be significantly diminished because, you know, of these nine incumbent Republicans, five of them are being targeted by these gerrymandered districts. And, you know, California will just have far fewer competitive congressional seats moving forward. It's as simple as that. And, you know, in the case that this ballot measure fails in November, I think that the consequences for Governor Gavin Newsom could be substantial. You know, he has made this his cause and obviously wants to elevate his national profile. So it would be a big loss for him if this doesn't go through in November.
Just to follow up on that, Maya, which five are there five sitting Republican congressmen that you by name that you can tell our audience about who could be threatened if this is approved? Any familiar names?
Yes. So we're talking about Representative Doug LaMalfa. He currently represents a district in the North State. Kevin Kiley, whose district runs down the entire California-Nevada border, pretty much, and has Lake Tahoe. We're talking about Representative Ken Calvert down in Riverside. and Representative Daryl Issa, also in Southern California, and finally Representative David Valadao, whose district is in the Central Valley.
Wow, thank you. Leah, there's a recent Emerson College polling survey of California voters, and that found that, you know, more than half, a little more than half registered voters plan to vote in favor of Prop 50, compared to about a third who plan to vote no, and 15% said they're undecided still. What is the status of Prop 50 as of now, and what does the Newsom administration expect next month?
That's a great question. You know, we actually just had my paper had a endorsement interview with him, and I asked him this very question. You know, most ballot initiatives, you want to start with a strong lead. And as you said, you know, right now they're barely cracking above 50%. You know, I think it's, you know, with 3 weeks out, it's a real toss up. I think, you know, for now, or Newsom has been beating this drum of this, that this is kind of California's chance to help stop Congress from enacting much of Trump's legislative agenda, and kind of stop him from consolidating his executive power the way he has. It's there's a lot of unknowns. As you said, you know, there's quite a big number of independents who are undecided. The Yes on Prop 50 campaign has been saying that this is an existential threat to democracy, whereas the No side is saying, you know, this is just gerrymandering. You know, we have no way of knowing whether the Democrats will actually follow through on their word and go back to letting the Independent Redistricting Commission take back control of redrawing congressional lines after 2030. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Leah, just a follow-up on that. Governor Newsom, many people believe, is eyeing his own bid at the White House in 2028. And he has been very combative on social media and other places going after the Trump administration. Should the fight for Prop 50, should that be seen as being a piece of Newsom rising in the political firmament, or is this just sort of an isolated case of Democratic, the Democrats basically pushing back on the whole idea of voting rights?
No, definitely we should be seeing this through the prism of his, you know, aspirations for higher office. Just this morning came out with a program that California is going to start producing its own insulin. He's been really pushing a lot of legislation to, you know, make California be the first to do X, you know, shoring up its, you know, environmental agenda, fighting back against the Pentagon's incursions into LA and Portland. But this is, you know, Prop 50 is kind of his chance to differentiate himself from the rest of the Democrats who want to be leading in 2028. Because if this is successful, as, you know, Maya said, this is, you know, this could help the Democrats, you know, kind of come out of the political wilderness, so to speak, and take back control of the House, and kind of come back to power in a way, as they're kind of, they've been, you know, kind of casting about for a way to regain some of the popular, you know, some of the popularity that they lost. And, you know, we saw a really real backslide in the 2024 election.
And midterm elections generally are against the incumbent in the White House or his or their party.
Right.
Okay. I have a question for both of you, but we'll start with you, Maya. If approved by the voters, Prop 50 would temporarily allow the legislature to use the gerrymandered maps until 2030, after which California's Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission would resume the process. Even though Prop 50 is supposed to be temporary, is there a risk it becomes permanent once it is in effect? And I ask this question because the Supreme Court is currently dealing with provisions of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which has been severely compromised by the Roberts Court already.
Mm-hmm. Well, that certainly is an argument that the no side is making. And they are cautioning voters, warning voters that once we open the gerrymandering Pandora's box, there's no putting it back. There's no putting the lid back on mm-hmm. that box. So, you know, what guarantee do we have that, you know, the yes side will go, you know, won't go back on their word? What's to guarantee that this independent redistricting commission will actually be able to do its work again in 2031? The yes side is saying that, well, it is written into the ballot measure and you know, that's it's going to become, if it passes, that would become the law, that they return to the Independent Redistricting Commission in 2031 after the next census. So essentially the yes side is saying it is going to be codified that we go back to the way things were. And by not doing so, we would be breaking the law. But I guess I don't, and I'm not steeped in legal, kind of the legalese of all of it, but I mean, the no side is saying, what other guarantee do we have besides a handshake and a promise that you're going to abide by your word?
I guess in the Trump era, rules and traditions and things of that nature are ephemeral to some
precisely.
Degree.
I think that there is some doubt that, you know, what's to keep you from going back on this word or this promise? And, you know, it was written into the California Constitution that our maps are to be drawn by an independent commission. And if we can just change the Constitution to set them aside for a temporary period of 5 years, what's to stop, you know, another in 5 years, what's to stop that, you know, group of politicians who are in charge from saying, oh, how about another 5 years? How about another 10 years? How about indefinitely? So I think that there's just a lot of worry and uncertainty right now as to what that could look like and whether we will be in an even more, I don't know, polarized or, as the yes side is saying, state of emergency in terms of the integrity of democracy.
Just want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Maya C. Miller. She covers politics and government accountability for Cal Matters. And Leah Russell covers Gavin Newsom for the Sacramento Bee. We are talking about Prop 50, which is coming up in a special election next month on the 4th. And we're going to open up our phone lines and our emails. You can join our conversation by calling us at 866-798-TALK or 8255, or send us an email at yourcall at klw.org. And I think we have a caller, Kevin, already, Robert in Santa Cruz, who wants to talk about Prop 50. Robert?
Hi, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the call. And thank you, Mia, for your work with Cal Matters. I just want to be clear on two things which you covered a little bit, and I'm not sure you did on one of them. The first being that, of course, there's a fundamental difference between Prop 50 going to the voters and in response to Texas's legislative gerrymandering. So that's an important point. And speaking to the five-year expiration of the law, it is precisely because the voters voted it in, and the voters can easily vote it out if, by chance, an elected decided to extend it for 5 years. So that's an enormous difference. This is voter. It's voted upon by the people, and you know, I am quite excited about 50 passing, and just wanted to make sure your listeners understand that. Thank you for your work. Bye.
Thank you, Robert. Maya, you want to respond?
Sure. Well, thank you for tuning in and for calling in, and thank you for paying attention to the fact that we have a special election next month. You know, I've talked to plenty of people who are, the first that they're hearing of it is when I ask them, have you voted? Are you going to vote? Do you know what Prop 50 is? And so, yes, I think that's a very important clarification that the, you know, the yes side's argument is that they are putting the maps to the voters. They are, saying that this is the will, if 50 passes, it will be by the will of the California voters. It will not be, what Texas did, where the legislature, which is controlled by the Republicans, decided unilaterally to change the maps. However, I believe the no side is making the argument that this process was so rushed. We have an independent redistricting commission. They are still seated. If we wanted new maps, the commission should have been involved and should have been consulted rather than having these maps drawn in a back room by political insiders and then presented to the voters, as this is the option that you have, take it or leave it.
All right, Maya, you wrote this piece in Cal Matters, basically showing us which five Republican seats are in districts that would heavily favor the Democrats. I was thinking about Kevin Kiley because earlier this week he asked his GOP colleagues to come back into session, or actually asked Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, to get back in session because I guess this is probably hurting him to some degree. What do we know about the Democrats who would likely fill the seats previously held by Republicans, and how clear is it that how those races would play out, given that some candidates are campaigning against multiple opponents until they know whether Prop 50 is passed?
Well, I think that everybody is running their campaigns with the outcome that they want from 50. So if you are a Democrat trying to run for one of these currently competitive and post 50 would be less competitive and more pro-Democrat seats, then you are running your campaign as though 50 has already passed. You are announcing, you are gathering endorsements, you are fundraising. And on the flip side, if you are an incumbent Republican, or if you are somebody who was planning to challenge an incumbent Democrat who's in a district that will be, would be under 50 padded with more Democratic voters, you're basically preparing as though Prop 50 is going to fail. And I think that, yes, I think that it just totally depends on what you want to see happen and as a candidate, and they're preparing for their desired outcome.
I was wondering if you got an example. I was thinking Daryl Issa is a longtime congressman, longtime conservative, and goodness, you got a couple of folks who are lined up to run against him, regardless of how Prop 50 goes. Could you tell us more about that?
Exactly. Yes. So Daryl Issa's district is one of the five that would be turned from a less competitive seat for Democrats to a potential pickup. And I haven't kept track in recent days if anybody else has jumped into that race, but there are at least four or five candidates who have announced in that seat and are running as though they are going to be campaigning in the new In the newly drawn district. That district is going to be redrawn to have Palm Springs. I know for a fact that Brandon Riker of Palm Springs is running pretty hard for that seat. I've gotten at least three or four emails from his campaign in the last couple of days. I believe Marnie Von Wilpert is running in that seat. So you have some pretty heavyweight, names and candidates trying, vying for a seat that has not even been drawn yet. So I think that definitely once there is an outcome on 50, everybody, there's going to be a whole scramble of realigning of who's running in what district and who's switching districts. And so I think everybody will be breathing a sigh of relief that there is certainty after November.
Well, Leah, I hope you've kept your powder dry because I'm coming to you next. But question for both of you, but I want Leah to take this first. Both of you have reported extensively on how this is impacting individuals in these districts. These new maps will put very different communities with very different priorities in the same districts. What are we hearing from the communities who would be most affected by these new maps?
Yeah, thank you for asking. My colleague Nicole Nixon and I went up to the North State, and she went to Placerville right after these maps came out to talk to people about this very question. In the North State, we heard from a lot of people who were worried that For example, in Doug LaMalfa's district, if they were redrawn to be lumped in with more liberal voters in Sonoma and Napa County, that they kind of felt like their priorities living in rural parts of the North State would be overlooked and drowned out by people who have more money and more proximity to power down in the Bay Area. I spoke to one guy who had just gotten out of the Air Force, and he said, I like, my way of life up here in Redding. Life's slower. We have different, we have different priorities. I mean, Doug LaMalfa said, I'm a farmer. I hear from constituents all the time about, people worried about their wolves threatening livestock, and how would that square with, people down in the Bay Area who may not, have those concerns and may want to take, harder, may want to adopt more protections for wolves and say, I believe he directly said, how do I square my constituents who are being threatened by wolves with, people in the Bay Area who say, well, wolves are wonderful, we want to protect them. He also mentioned, there's not a whole lot of public transit infrastructure up in the North State. So, he was worried that, those dollars for helping kids get to school and expand school bus routes to kind of reach more rural communities, that money might go towards, more populated areas. And so, yeah, we're just hearing from people who are worried that, their concerns might get, living in smaller areas might get drowned out by people in more populated areas.
All right, we're going to go to a caller, Elizabeth in San Francisco, who wants to talk about the connection between redistricting and, of course, that magic, magic, magic word, campaign finance.
Yes, hi. I'm wondering why Democrats are putting all their emphasis and all their eggs in one basket regarding to Prop 50, when what we're dealing with is very severe corruption in both parties with regard to the campaign financing. I mean, we've already seen that, genocide happening in Gaza, for example, is being severely affected by both Democrats and Republicans who've been funded by AIPAC, and also the issue of fascism that we're dealing in this country. And something like Prop 50 is not going to cut it. We need to organize much more among our unions, and we need a general strike, actually, to be able to stop this from the get-go. Because what's happening now around the country is we're losing even our most basic rights. People are being raided in their apartments. If people want to know how Palestinians have felt for the past 77 years, well, people in Chicago found out, helicopters arriving on their rooftops, and they're being raided in their homes in the middle of the night. So I hope that we Democrats can finally put things in perspective, and Prop 50 is not going to cut it. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. We're going to go to a we're going to go to a break right now, and we'll get the response from Maya and Leah on the backside. Thank you. We're back. I'm Suni Khalid, and this is Your Call. I am joined by Maya C. Miller, who covers politics and government accountability for Cal Matters, and Leah Russell, who covers Gavin Newsom for the Sacramento Bee's Capital Bureau. We're talking about Prop 50. I want to ask either one of you if you wanted to respond to the previous caller who said that maybe the Democrats need to get their priorities in order and Prop 50 should not be at the top of the list.
I can go first, if that's okay, Maya.
Go for it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. Newsom in particular has been saying that, Prop 50 is their chance, is the Democrats' best chance of stopping, this, steamrolling by the Trump administration over, general court orders and ignoring, people's immigration statuses and that sort of thing. And organized labor has been behind Prop 50. I can't speak to the likelihood of a general strike, but I mean, they are saying like this is the way to go about kind of opposing the Trump administration. It's not, obviously, an organizing tactic, but you know, this is their electoral strategy, so to speak.
Any other comment? All right. Well, I have a question for both of you. I'm wondering about voter fatigue and the rising cost of these special elections and recalls and everything. Prop 50 has already been ranked as the seventh most expensive ballot measure in history of the state, with approximately $140 million raised for campaigns for and against as of Monday. The large majority, about 98 million, is for supporters and half of that for opponents. Leah, you wrote a piece in the SACB about this in September. Who is donating all of this money on each side and why? And I guess some familiar names come up.
Yeah. On the yes side, you know, it's a lot of the top Democrats, you know, Pelosi, the House Majority PAC, you know, Hakeem Jeffries has thrown his weight behind it. You know, Newsom has tapped some of his, you know, closest allies in the tech sector with, for example, Reed Hastings. You know, I saw the Resnick's largest water owners in the state have donated. And on the no side, you know, Kevin McCarthy came out swinging at first and said, you know, I'm going to raise $100 million. And that has fallen far, far short. But he, you know, his camp is getting some support from House Speaker Mike Johnson. And then the other no campaign is being almost solely subsidized by Charles Munger, who is a former Santa Clara Republican Party chair, is kind of a self-made Republican donor. And yeah, so there, like you said, there's a lot of money sloshing around, most of which is being thrown, you know, driven by the yes side and with, and, you know, tapping its ties to tech and, you know, just some very powerful people.
Very good. We have a caller, Dennis in Aptos. He wants to talk about why he'll support Prop 50. Dennis.
Yeah, hi. Yes, I am voting yes on 50. And it's really simple. It's about time the Democrats stop fighting with one hand tied behind their backs. Trump started this. He asked Louisiana, Texas, Greg Abbott, their fascist governor, to redraw the lines. They did. Missouri has been. Indiana, Florida, and I believe there's another state in there, maybe Georgia. It's undemocratic. So what, are we supposed to stand around and do nothing? No, we're going to do the same damn thing. And if they don't like it, too bad. You know, they want to act undemocratically. Well, then, you know what? We'll just redraw our lines so that not just, I hope not just five, but all nine of those Republicans lose their seats, especially Daryl Issa, who's one of the most right-wing fascists, un-American fascists, sitting in Congress, who years ago should have been put in prison for insurance fraud. I don't know how he beat that rap, but he did. So that's all I got to say. It's about time Democrats fought back. And if Republicans don't like it, too bad. They've got voter suppression going on in a lot of the red taker states. They've got the Supreme Court watering down the Voting Rights Act of 1965. This stuff needs to be fought back, or else we, the people, are going to lose our democracy to right-wing Trump fascism. That's all I got to say.
Well, you said a lot. Thank you, Dennis. I wanted to ask Maya that I talked about this. We talked about this early in the program. The Supreme Court is considering a case on voting rights, and that has been the Voting Rights Act in 65. The provisions, the protections have been severely downgraded during the Roberts Court. I was looking at a map in the New York Times, which projected the political map or the congressional map if the challenge to the 65 Voting Rights Act was successful. And with the areas of red, it looked like a partial map of the Confederacy. I'm wondering, could this Supreme Court decision, could it render the results of Prop 50 moot?
Well, I think you ask a very good question, and I I saw a headline in the New York Times that said the Supreme Court case that could hand the House to Republicans. So I think that you're onto something here. You know, this question of is Prop 50 even going to be worth anything at the end of the day once, other states and other, factors outside of California, when the dust settles on, redistricting efforts in other states, and if the Supreme Court does weigh in and make a consequential ruling in this case, then I don't think we know yet. We're just going to have to keep an eye on that. But you ask a good question, like this sort of message of futility, this feeling of futility, and you mentioned voter fatigue earlier. And you heard from the Dennis who just called in, people are frustrated. People want to, especially on the Democratic side, want something to do, like do something, please, like let us do something. So I think in any case, whether or not Prop 50 is able to, hand Democrats enough seats to overcome redistricting in Republican states, Prop 50 at least has given the Democratic side something to do, has given voters a way to feel involved, to feel like they are taking some sort of action. And I spent some time down in the Central Valley a couple of weeks ago in David Valadao's district and talked to folks down there. I was so surprised by the fact that nobody who I talked to gave me just the apathetic, oh, I'm tired of politics. I don't want to vote. I can't believe they're making us vote again. I'm so tired of this. I don't even want to engage. I was expecting more of those answers, and nobody said that to me. Everybody was like, oh, what is Prop 50? Can you remind me what that is? And then once I told them what it was, they would say, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. I've heard of that. Or, oh, no, that's horrible. Like, we can't be ripping up our independent redistricting commission. That's two wrongs don't make a right. So I think if nothing else, Prop 50 gave, I guess the yes side and Democrats something to do to feel like they were fighting back against this administration.
Okay, we have another caller, Graham in Baltimore. Hope that's my old hometown, and I hope that you're bleeding purple and black like we have since the season started. He sees a connection between Prop 50 and the Supreme Court killing the Voting Rights Act. We're not going to lose this Sunday, are we, Graham?
I am not a Ravens fan. I am actually, it's a long story, but I hear what you're saying. When you say purple and black, I'm right by a transit stop, and everybody goes to the game. They all gather on Sundays to catch the light rail.
But give it to us. What do you have to say?
Well, basically, yeah. I mean, I'm in favor of Proposition 50, but we go into this understanding, as has already been mentioned, the Voting Rights Act. What's left of it is probably about to be overturned, which will probably result in permanent Southern majorities of GOP in Southern states in the House of Representatives. I think what we need to do is I'm not a huge Gavin Newsom fan. We could criticize Gavin Newsom all day long on this show, but if it helps him possibly become president, I'll take him as president over Donald Trump, but he has to start doing a couple of things as soon as he gets into office. We're going to have to expand the Supreme Court. Otherwise, we're stuck like this for years and years and years to come. And so there's going to have to be, voters are going to have to demand that if Democrats retake national office, at least the presidency, that the Democrats that get into office are going to have to fight and actually take some serious, non-cowardly action. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Maya, I want to ask you this question, which goes back to what we had talked about before about the donations on either side. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, but they might ordinarily be directed to individual candidates instead of going to the Prop 50 campaigns. How large is this? How large is this pie? And how do Democrats and Republicans in the state stand to be impacted when these funds are being redirected toward another issue?
You know, I asked this same question earlier in the summer when the campaigns were just getting underway. And the calculus for the Democrats is, you know, this idea that we are making an investment up front, like, for example, the House Majority PAC, which is the super PAC aligned with House Democratic leadership in Washington. If they pour in $6 million, $10 million to Prop 50, and they come out on the other side with five additional seats that are favorable to Democrats, that's money that they don't have to spend in those five, what would otherwise be five competitive seats, which, you know, the seats in Orange County are, it's an extremely expensive media market. And so I think that the Democrats at least are seeing Prop 50 as potentially, you know, invest early and then have savings on the back end in terms of, you know, races that they don't have to spend on for next year's midterm cycle. On the flip side, for Republicans, it's not as clear cut of an advantage. Prop 50, the no on Prop 50 campaign for them is sucking money from what would otherwise be individual donations to individual candidates. And really, if they do defeat Prop 50, it's not like they're gaining any. It's a net. There's no net gain or net loss. Things stay the way that they are. So they're out all of the money that they had to spend on the no side of this campaign. So that's the two ways to look at it. There's an advantage for Democrats and no advantage and maybe a disadvantage for Republicans.
Okay, I wanted to ask Leah first. You know, the heavy hitters are coming in. We've had increasingly high-profile political figures getting involved in the campaign. Former governor and Terminator Arnold Schwarzenegger has come out against it, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and former President Obama have announced their support, with Obama starting to appear on various media spots, and he's going so far as to say that democracy is on the ballot. How does this fight play out in the broader redistricting battle between the parties on the national level? And will it serve as a check on the GOP's power that some Democrats are hoping it will?
Great question. We'll see. I mean, you know, I think it depends on whether this passes or not. I asked Newsom a few weeks ago, you know, the Democrats' message back in 2024 during the election was, you know, this was a chance to save democracy from Trump. And obviously that failed. And, you know, what do you think is different this time around? And he said, you know, everyone yells at us for not talking about kitchen table issues, which we are, but there's not going to be a kitchen table when he's burning the entire house down. And, you know, I think that the Democrats kind of see this as, you know, almost a, you know, we were right moment, you know, pointing to kind of how Trump's, you know, impulses have been not as checked as they were during the first term. You know, we're looking at, you know, they point to the ICE raids, you know, jailing of U.S. citizens, you know, the curtailing of free speech, you know, ignoring court orders, that sort of thing. Does that answer your question?
It does. Do you expect any other heavy hitters to come out in the 3 weeks that we have before? I mean, who else? I mean, I guess Hollywood is replete with big stars. Who else are you hearing might be doing some spots or even appearing at rallies before November 4th?
Well, I'm sure that if they were bringing out a bigger star than Obama, they would not tell me first. But once you got Obama, he's pretty much the Democrats' heavyweight. They, you know, there's nobody more There's nobody more well-known or popular, I would say, on the Democratic side than the former president. And so I think the fact that they are putting him on TV, on digital, you know, spending millions and millions of dollars on ad buys to have him speak directly to California voters and say, you know, the country is depending on you. That's powerful. And I don't think there's any messenger more powerful on the Democratic side than President Obama. So I couldn't tell you who they might bring. I mean, maybe they would bring out Taylor Swift. Who knows? I don't think so. But my money is not on that. But on the Republican side, I definitely think that they tried to get former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger to weigh in. He has not officially aligned himself with the No on 50 campaign, but he also has not said that they can't use his name, image, likeness videos of him at that USC Democracy Day summit to make their case. So I would say that he's probably their biggest, most well-recognized champion for the no side. As for upcoming,
he'll be back.
Celebrities, I don't know.
He'll be back. Okay, this is SUNY Khalid, and this is Your Call. We're speaking with Maya C. Miller. She covers politics and government accountability for Cal Matters, and Leah Russell, my Baltimore Sun alumni. Fellow alum who covers Governor Gavin Newsom for the Sacramento Bee's Capital Bureau. We're talking about the upcoming Prop 50, which will go to the voters will go to the polls on November 4th, or maybe they won't because everyone has mail-in ballots here in California. I wanted to ask Maya first. Most of the GOP's opposition to Prop 50 has to do with concern about losing the House in 2026. How could another blue wave election, similar to the one we had back in 2018, how could that impact the GOP's ability to carry out this Trump agenda? And I keep thinking about this. We're probably looking at the longest government shutdown, at least this is what the Republican leadership is talking about, that they're going to stay out until Thanksgiving.
Well, I have not been in this business very long, but I've been around long enough to say that nothing surprises me anymore. So, you know, if they stay out until Thanksgiving, Lord help us, but
we're cynics by profession. We're cynics by profession, Maya.
We're paid to be cynics, but anyways, no, I think that this is consequential for for Republicans, certainly because, you know, in midterm elections, as Leah said earlier, the party in power, the party of the president, tends to not do as well because it's the first opportunity for voters really to have a voice on or almost a referendum on the, you know, what they have thought of the first 2 years of a presidency. And, you know, in time and time again, you've seen the House at least change hands from, you know, presidential year to the first midterm election after a presidential election. So certainly the Democrats are hoping to recreate that, like you said, that blue wave from 2018, even down to the messaging on centering on healthcare. Remember in 2018, the big message was these Republicans voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They want to take away your healthcare. They don't care about your health. Let's get them out of here, was the message on the Democratic side. And this time around, they're really trying to capture the energy from the Republicans' mega bill, which, among many other things, is I believe the Congressional Budget Office estimated that 10 million people in the next 10 years would lose healthcare coverage under Medicaid, which is the federal healthcare program for low-income and disabled individuals, and then as well as the Affordable Care Act plans that are subsidized on the open market. So they're really trying to make this election about healthcare again, because that worked in 2018, and you know they're hoping to repeat history. So it's just a question of whether people will be paying attention to that, whether that message is going to resonate, or whether, you know, there's a long time between now and November of next year, and a lot can happen.
There's really not that much time between now and 2028. So we have an email question from Eileen, and she says, is Gavin Newsom giving this to measure his popularity? He seems to be running for the White House. Is this a way for him to test the waters? I don't know if we've dealt with that adequately enough. Leah, your thoughts?
Yes. you know, he's also done other things that I think are a little bit more blatantly obvious. Like he went to North Carolina earlier this summer, which, you know, Biden won back in 2020. And, you know, that's kind of seen as the gateway to the South for Democrats to test their popularity and see how they fare outside of California, or outside of their home states in this case. It's fair to say we can, you know, see this as a referendum on Newsom's popularity, even though it, you know, as we know, only California voters will be weighing in.
Okay, Maya, I want to ask you this. How big of an impact will the outcome of Prop 50 have not only in on California's political future, but the political future of the entire country?
Well, you don't ask small questions here.
Hey, I'm just a simple Midwest country boy with dust on my boots.
Oh, hey, I'm from Iowa, so you know Midwesterners, we gotta stick together.
Yeah, we do, except on Saturdays.
Oh yeah, you know, I'll give it to you. So I mean, you brought up a great question about this outcome of the Supreme Court case, certainly, and you know, whether that would this dismantling of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, would that essentially render Prop 50 moot? I was checking in with my esteemed, not colleagues anymore, but former colleagues at the New York Times. They have an article out today with sort of breaking down different scenarios of how Democrats could win the House if states redraw their districts. And, you know, if California were to redraw its lines, if Prop 50 passes, that threshold for the national popular vote that Democrats would need to win to, you know, take the House, that barrier is lowered significantly by, you know, those five seats. So I think that certainly California, you know, if Prop 50 passes, then that almost certainly seals California's reputation as a blue state. You know, I was just talking to a Republican state senator the other day who said California will have pretty much no competitive congressional seats if Prop 50 passes. And, you know, right now California gets a lot of attention for its, you know, four or five competitive House seats. That's enough to tip the majority either way. So every year, national journalists are paying attention to California and to California's competitive districts. That might not happen anymore if, you know, the state doesn't have competitive seats that are worth pouring millions and millions of advertising dollars into. You know, and as for the political future of the country, you know, if California is a solidly Democratic state, and you know a handful of southern states decide to redistrict even after the Supreme Court potentially weighs in next summer, you know, those districts might not necessarily be redrawn in time for the 2026 midterms. If Section 2 of the VRA is struck down, the consequences from that, we might not feel that until 2028, 2030, even after the 2030 census. So I think that is a little too soon to tell as to that question of whether Prop 50 would be moot if the Supreme Court rules a certain way on the VRA. But you know, certainly it's definitely a game changer for the sort of political landscape of California and therefore the competitiveness of the House.
Leah, we have a couple minutes left. I am going to ask you a question about mood. What you're hearing from people when you go out and do your reporting? What is the national mood right now, or the mood in California that voters have towards what's happening politically on the national level?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can kind of see it from the people who called in. You know, people are frustrated, angry, I think fair to say scared. Trump kept saying this week he's, San Francisco is going to be the next city that the Pentagon storms with National Guard soldiers, even though, local leaders said, no, if you do that, we will arrest agents. Just, fair to say people are, extremely anxious, worried about, everything that's happening. And I think also a little bit of fatigue and I don't want to say checked out, but there's just it feels like every day it's something new and there's a new crisis to respond to or a new conflict. It's even hard, I think Maya, back me up here. I think it's even hard for us political reporters to keep track of everything going on.
Yeah, no, I agree. I had just only today saw the New York Times upshot story about the VRA. So it's there's so many moving parts and there's so much to keep track of that, you just kind of have to pick a lane.
All right. Well, you have the last word. All right. Thank you very, very much. We're talking with Maya C. Miller. She covers politics and government accountability for Cal Matters, and Leah Russell, who governors Governor Gavin Newsom for the Sacramento Bee. I'm Sunni Khalid, and just wanted to say, to listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit klw.org/yourcall. You can find us on iTunes, where you can give us a review. Follow us on Twitter at yourcallradio and email show ideas and feedback to yourcall@klw.org. Nina Kissinger helped produce today's show. Without her, I would not be able to survive. And Kevin Vance has been holding my hand. He is our studio engineer. Thanks for joining us. I'm Sunni Khalid. It's your call.